I hope you've had a chance to meet folks around your tables if you're not familiar with everybody. We will not do large group introductions because that would take our whole hour together, but I do want to introduce myself as we get started. Today we're going to talk about church planter best practices, and I hope it's a collaborative time as I'll share more about in just a second. My name is Dave Strunk. I am the lead pastor of a church called Church of the Redeemer in the Maryville, Alcoa area of Tennessee, which is just south of Knoxville. Obligatory Go Vols. And we were planted out of our mother church, Cedar Springs Presbyterian Church in Knoxville, which hosted General Assembly in 2014. And I've been in the EPC, I've been in the EPC church since 2006, but ordained since 2010. So this has always been my home denomination. I love it, and I love talking about church planting. Just to get a sense of who's in the room and where our conversation might go, I'd like to know kind of who is in what constituency in church planting. So if you are actively planting a church or helping plant a church right now, would you raise your hand? Okay, so yeah, about a third of the room. If you are a parent, partner, or patron of a church plant right now, would you raise your hand? Yeah, so about another third of the room. And if you are just interested in church planting at all or just interested in this conversation, would you raise your hand? Okay, yeah, okay, good. All right, yeah, about half, over half the room. Excellent. Well, originally, Michael Carrion out of the Redeemer Network was going to be talking about planting multi-ethnic churches, which I have to confess is not an area of expertise for me at all. So we're retooling this to talk about church planting best practices. So as I intro that, I'm going to share a few things that I've been learning, but I want you guys to be thinking, especially if you're actively planting a church or you have been supporting a church as a parent or a partner, I want everybody to be thinking about what's one thing that we have learned through this process that would be worth sharing with someone else in the room. And if you can think about that right now, and you could share it in a minute or less, I'm going to ask that question in just a little bit. And I want to do that because there's really not a one-size-fits-all approach to church planting. There's lots of different models on how to plant a church. There's lots of different regions and intended audiences for church plants. So a lot of good ideas come from all over the map. And sometimes what someone shares with you might be the very thing that you needed to hear, but you couldn't have ever found that in an article or a book, and that's why I like swapping best practices. So let me share two different best practices that I have been learning about recently. One is in the category of leadership development, and another is in the category of evangelism, which you've been hearing about a lot this week already. So best practices. Best practice for me in leadership development, when COVID hit, our church was 2.5 years old, and I remember this phrase from my background from another pastor who used to say it all the time. He used to say this phrase, non-anxious presence. And when COVID, we were in the thick of it, that March through May of 2020, I just kept experiencing a lot of people in my church and myself being really anxious. So I wanted to research, where did that phrase come from? And I found it came from this Jewish rabbi and therapist from the 1970s through the 90s called Edwin Friedman. And it turns out almost any great leadership book that's been written in the last 10 years is all just kind of borrowing and repackaging his stuff anyway. So he wrote two books that were really helpful to me. One was called Generation to Generation, which is about the emotional processes, particularly of anxiety, in the life of, for him, a Jewish synagogue, or for us, a church. And reading Generation to Generation helped me understand how to become a better non-anxious leader, to still be leading, but to be leading not out of my emotional reactivity, but out of non-anxiousness. And I think I can justifiably say, Matt Cohn, who has been our resident for the last 2 years, as we have dialogued about the things we have learned in that book, it has probably been one of the more seminal things we have learned together. So I just commend that book to you. It's called Generation to Generation. The second book Friedman wrote was called Failure of Nerve. It came out in the 1990s. And in that book, he just talks about how we just live in this super anxious age. And I think even more so 30 years after the time he wrote it. And he talks about what bold leadership looks like. Gentle leadership, you might say, non-reactive leadership, but still bold leadership that breaks imaginative log jams. And the book's called Failure of Nerve because he says most American leadership isn't. It's not leadership. It's really just a chance to conciliate lots of different factions, which I think is all too true in the church. So Failure of Nerve has given me a lot of courage. So I recommend those two books as leadership development. Those are best practices. Just read those books. They'll change you, I promise. Next thing, evangelism, an evangelism best practice. I remember Ed Stetzer, who was our plenary speaker last year at General Assembly, he did research on churches that had evangelism practices. And for the long time, for the last 20 years, the American Evangelical Church, we have gotten rid of the old crusade or programmatic approaches to evangelism because the culture shifted and people of my generation, the millennial generation, said that programmatic approach just doesn't work anymore. But we threw the baby out with the bathwater and we just didn't have any plan for evangelism. And Stetzer found through his research at Wheaton and everything that any church that has any program on evangelism or any approach to something about evangelism is better than no approach. And so as a church planner, I began to think, well, I don't want to have this kind of canned crusade approach to evangelism, or we'll put on a really cool movie and, you know, throw an awesome party and just hope people show up. I don't think that really works anymore. At least it doesn't where I live. And so I began to think, well, what would be a plan for evangelism? And I began to think about people's barriers to even sharing Jesus in the first place. And I think a lot of it boils down to courage, having the courage to overcome someone's fear. So what I did was to put together a relational evangelism workshop for my church, not a class. We intentionally call it a workshop because I just want to give people practice at evangelism. A chance to do role play so that they can begin to overcome their fears. There's not a ton of content that I teach. In fact, I've done it 3 times now, and each time I've gotten a little better at being the antagonistic non-Christian, and people just try to have conversations with me as I would teach them how I have conversations with non-Christians. And I have found that that has been a real good way for people to overcome their fear and to begin to invite people to church in the first place. In fact, I've done it 3 times now, and every time I've done it, and prayer is a big part of what we do, praying for the lost. Every time we've done it, over half the people that have gone through it have successfully invited a de-church or unchurched person to church within the next 3 weeks. So, a workshop. That's been a fun best practice to embark upon. Now, I don't want to give you the wrong picture of that either. There's about 180 adults in our church, and I've done the class 3 times, and only 27 adults have gone through it. So as you think about best practices, one of the things I've found is the things that leak the most in church world are evangelism and prayer. Christians are good. If I didn't have any plan for small groups, Christians are natural. They would do it anyway. They would just come up. Hey, we should be in a small group. We should just get together. We don't need a lot of programmatic development for that. Christians are going to want to worship no matter what. You get 7 Christians together and they're not a part of a church and they live in Saudi Arabia. They're going to find each other and they're going to worship. What leaks the most in American church life, I have found, is prayer and evangelism, which is where, as a leader, I try to push most of my people vision-wise. So I don't want to give the wrong impression on my relational evangelism workshop that my church is just going nuts for evangelism, but I'm not giving up on it. And if 5 people take it every year I do it, that would be fine with me, as long as by the time I retire, all 180 people have gone through it. All right, so I want to hear from you guys. Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Do you celebrate that in worship? I mean, do you have them come forward to give a witness, a testimony? Because it seems to me that should light the rest of the congregation.
Yeah, that's one of the areas that I'm really bad at. I'm really bad at vision and really bad at celebrating. I'm always thinking ahead. I don't.
There's somebody in your church.
That's right. That's right. But that's it's a good question. And if we wouldn't celebrate somebody just darkening the door of the church for the first time, because that would make them feel weird. But I have said this for a long time. We need to get better at celebrating for sure. All right. So I asked you at the beginning, what is one best practice you have learned in church planning? And this would be a good time. If you have notes, get them out. And an idea that one of you might share with one another might really spark you, and you might have unexpectedly inspired you. So this could be something that's operational that you've learned. It might be something spiritual. It might be something about leadership. It might be ruthlessly practical. It might be something about the culture of your church. It might be something about the worship of your church. But I'm just interested. What is one thing you'd be willing to share in 1 minute or less so that more people can share that you have learned as a best practice in church planting? And I'll try to repeat if it's hard to hear. Anybody brave enough to go first? If not, I'm going to start calling on people. Yeah, Colin.
Yeah, I've been a church planner for about a month, so yeah. Wisdom and experience.
Yes! Share with us, Colin.
Yeah, one of the things I've been encouraged to do, and especially with my wife, this is a pastor that is a pastor, and as maybe some of the more anxious members of the team, is to consistently, or at least regularly, think through the question of what would happen if all of this fell apart? What would happen if God took all of this away, and rehearsing the fact that God would still be faithful, he would still love us just as much as he does, as he would if it grew to 1,000 people. And what we found is that that gives the strength to say, if he's calling us somewhere where we don't know if it's going to succeed, that anxiety is removed because we've already leaned into the fact that he loves us the same no matter what. He is proud of us no matter what. So.
Yeah, I love that. That's a culture-shaping thing, right? So you just ask the same question every time your leadership gathers, and it winds up shaping the entire core of your church. And you might look forward 5 years from now, and that question is still rooted in your identity. That's a really cool idea. Thank you. Yeah, Larry.
So one of the things that we've been really thinking about is actually prioritizing, well, maybe de-emphasizing Sunday over what we do in the rest of the week, especially as we've been thinking about neighborhood involvement. So one.
Yeah, and tell the whole room, where are you located? Because I think it's key to what you're sharing.
Yeah, so I'm in the Pacific Northwest in Port Orchard, Washington. And that's, you know, where Seattle is. We're across the water west from Seattle. So, for example, one of the things that we've done more recently is we've been thinking about third places and having meetings and gatherings in third places. And telling our congregation members, these meetings are not for you, they're for your neighbors. And we had a series of meetings where we asked questions about things. Like one question was, what is community? And then we ended with, what does your community need? And these are open, common, good questions. And people from our congregation weren't afraid to invite their neighbors to these things because, you know, what is community? That's not intimidating, right? So we were helping people get it into their bones. How do you invite somebody to something? We were creating a space where it was really a question of shalom. Like what Tommy was saying yesterday, you know, he was saying, ask the question, what is wrong with our world? And so even though it's a question, what is community, it's actually a very spiritual question.
Yeah.
And so what we found was by the third time we did this meeting in a third space, we did it at a place called Yoke Brewery, right? Which, anyway, that's a whole different story. Anyway, but this third place where people were drinking beer and hanging out, they were also having spiritual conversations and building relationship with non-Christians and their neighbors. And so we found that to be really effective. Just think outside of Sunday as a place to invite and gather and do church things.
Yeah. Could y'all in the back here, Larry? Yeah. If you're not familiar with that term, third space is a sociological term, and it really originates in late capitalist America, right? First place is home, second place is work. And in church planning world, church planners think a lot about those third spaces. How am I even gonna meet non-Christians in this new place that we're trying to start this new thing? Third places are coffee shops or breweries or fitness centers. These places where people still naturally go and you can meet them and you have a plan. And that's a really cool idea of actually hosting community forums that are non-threatening to non-Christians. In third spaces. Yeah, great idea. Thank you for sharing that. Anybody else? What's one best practice you'd be willing to share with the room? Like, this is actually working for us. Yeah.
My name is Sam Floyd. We work with World Outreach actually in Budapest in North Point, Saturday. And one best practice for us has actually been minimizing the word. This is kind of a new backwards thing, but we minimize the word evangelism and we maximize the word disciple. And in that, then we very clearly try to define what we're aiming for. So very focused type definition of what is a disciple? What do we actually want to see? You know, I was really challenged. One story in our work this year, a small group of us who do a lot of training equipping, we had a chance to do an equipping training in disciple making with Ukrainian chaplains. And so one of the questions that my co-worker colleague asked them, which is really challenging, and I'm going to just challenge you all with this for a minute, challenge your thinking, but how many of us can name a disciple of one of our disciples? And that is one of the reasons that we talk about disciple making versus evangelism, because when we think evangelism, we generally think the end goal is winsomely telling something that they know and then inviting them to church. But the gospel multiplying is the idea of I'm going to make a disciple that's equipped in making disciples. And so I think the other thing I'd add is, we look at disciple making and kind of teaching that happens within the church and in our community as equipping pathways or exercises in skill building versus knowing. And so, I love a workshop and I love third spaces because those are exercises in skill building where, our believers are going into these spaces and beginning to practice it. Because that's how you really learn and know.
Right. Thank you. Is that officially like a DMM thing?
Yeah. So we practice from that paradigm.
Yeah, that's really cool. Right on.
I'd love to speak with any of you about any of that and would encourage you tomorrow. We just have the mission cohort. So the WO's mission cohort come over to us to do something like that for me where they did a little bit of mentoring online and they came and exercised that and practice. But if you want to hear from some of them what that was like and what that looks like for them.
What is DMM?
Disciple making movement.
Yeah, and I'd be happy to talk to anybody about, more about that as well, but you'll hear more about your movement application this week. As you hear about that, a lot of these values are the undergirding principles and practices.
Yeah, and it's a very popular, for a DMM person, at least as the folks I know in like Indonesia, to them, DMM is the strategy where church planting is actually the end result. A lot of times, but those church plants might just be house churches of 8 people, but you wind up having thousands of them, and because the aim is discipleship, the aim is always discipleship. So, yeah. I probably didn't represent that perfectly, but that's
okay.
Yeah.
Non-anxious presence. By the way, you said it, we use that book a lot too.
So. Oh, man. Changed my life.
It will change your lives. He's right.
Man.
Okay,
other best practices. One thing, it could be simple, practical, it could be spiritual, deep, could be anything in between. What's one thing that you've been learning in church planning that'd be worth sharing with the room?
I'm in New York. Actually, no, Michael, carry on. One thing that we've been trying to do is also work in the third spaces. So, Michael, our lead pastor, couldn't be here this week, but we've partnered, this is just one little area, but we partnered with this group called, they call them F3, which stands for Faith, Fitness, and Fellowship. Are you familiar with them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And it's really anyone who has any faith background or just questions, like they may not even proclaim anything, but they're just kind of feeling the faith out. And Michael's big into fitness, so that's one way where you go on a Saturday morning, you do a little workout. And then it provides a time for fellowship. And through that, he's been able to invite some of those guys to some other third space events, like a Super Bowl party or something like that. One or two of them have come to church. But it's a neutral space with some commonality, which would be like fitness or something like that. And I've been doing something similar. I'm not fitness, but I'm more a coffee nerd. So before church on Sunday, I'll go to a coffee shop and just, I want to be regular, right? So they know who I am and, get coffee. And then anyone in our church, of course, is invited to just show up and get coffee and chill. And there's all types of different people going through. So, and in New York City, it's, those third spaces are everywhere and seems to be really, there's no obligation for anyone to go to church. So we really have to go and meet people in different bars and things like that. But it does give us a good reason to, go to the bar or coffee shop, right? So, but that's something we've been doing.
Right on. Yeah, my wife and I, we lived here for 10 years and she was on Young Life staff. And so all of my relational evangelism skills I learned from her. And we always joke, if you have any background with Young Life, there's the 5 C's of Young Life. They talk about club, which is the weekly gathering. There's camp. You try to take kids to camp every summer. And campaigners is really their discipleship strategy. But the first C is contact work, which is being regular and going to where kids are. And I found that, in the South, going to a brewery, that's where the non-Christians are. And it's like taking candy from a baby because none of the Baptists in my community are there. So... it's easy. Right.
They're all there.
They might, that's right. They might be there, but they're not telling their pastor. Others?
I
I like the free-ranging nature of this conversation. Yeah, Tom.
Tom Melton, where do you begin? A couple of ideas. One is that sometimes we don't grasp is if you're a larger church, like out of Greenwood, we started 7 churches, and none of them were by design. In most ways, we really couldn't take credit for them, even though we tried. But what happened was that I think rather than only thinking of a church planting pastor, to think of church planting community. So one of the reasons that these churches came up is because we became, from the very beginning, when we started out of Cherry Hills. I was a associate pastor here at Cherry Hills when we made the decision to move here when I started Greenwood. But what we were starting was really a community that, and it's we talked about having that contagion, that ideally, if we understand it, I think that these communities, they're communities that enjoy, that are alive and well, the natural thing is to want to reproduce. But not necessarily just be sent out. There's a lot of different ways sent out without, you know, just some one guy's vision. I didn't really have a vision for Greenwood in the sense of a strategy per se. It was really a message that caught hold of me, and then other people caught hold. Then the natural thing was if you pay attention, and I remember meeting. Tom, you can remember some of this. When we were first starting, they had this thing called the Tall Steeple Pastors or whatever, because we were the largest churches in the denomination, and you know, we would kind of get together and talk about stuff. But that, and the EPC was really in formation then, and they had a big kind of summit with the 10 largest churches. And the thing that I was harping on then, and not I alone, but that's what it sounded like, was that to not be afraid to give away what God's given to us. Our job is not to hoard, it's to steward and send out. And so at that time, there was a great deal of fear amongst some of the higher leaders that we were going to lose our reform, whatever. And as what I was saying is, it's not ours. And the church is not ours, it's God's. And so how do we steward it? It's easy to say that, but what I've seen is if you look at all 7 of those churches to this day, probably 5 of them are still going, a couple of them are history. But that what it was wasn't just a single pastor. There was a movement within our congregation. And so I guess that would be just something, another way of looking at church planting.
Yeah.
Is through the ideas of planting a community.
Yeah.
Fabricate the community, but be aware of it. And if it's there, don't hold on to it long.
Yeah.
The gestation period is different for different types of plants.
Yeah, this is, there's not a one size fits all, and because I know a little bit about Tom and Greenwood, it's not a plan, it's a posture of hospitality, and particularly in the founding of Greenwood, a posture of party. We're just going to have fun together, and we're going to show non-Christians what it's like to actually have joy in Christ. And that posture just is contagious. And it doesn't have to be, I'm more of an organizational systems guy. I have the plan, I have the 5-year whatever. But there's not a one-size-fits-all, and thank you for offering that.
Those of you that are in the room that are current church planters, you're actually on the ground working right now. You want to get Tom Melton's phone number, you want to put it in your phone. If you won't give it to you, I have it. But in all seriousness, Tom is one of the most brilliant church planters that's ever come through the EPC, and he wouldn't say that, so I'm saying it for him. But it's kind of like, you know, talking to an uncle or a grandpa. They don't have to really take care of you, but they're there to love on you, and he is a great guy. Give as a resource just to say, here's what I'm dealing with this week. Have you ever dealt with this, and what do you think?
Yep.
He would be a really wonderful person to be able to have that conversation, and I know he'd be willing to do it. So.
Yeah. Well said. That's the best spirit behind a networking lunch, right? We're here to network and meet each other and share and swap ideas. Yeah. Okay, other ideas. What is one best practice you have learned in church planting? And if you're struggling in church, oh yeah, go ahead.
So my name is Doug Dempsey, Faith PPC, Brooksville, Florida. We planted a church, and you prompted me with the plan. Our pastor had a great plan, and I was on the session at the time. It was a 5-year plan to wean that church planter off of our budget, which was very good. We sent 12 covenant families to that church. So these are just practical things that took place. Now, 7 years later, maybe 6 or 7 years later, this church is planting, considering planting a church. And our church has been fearful of where this church has been. Not all of us, but some of a new pastor coming upon. Hey, you know, there's a lot of our congregants going over there worshiping. So now, you know, the faith and the trust of the Lord to say, okay, let's do it again. Or let's partner with them. So it is scary. I'm just kind of scary as a parent church, but seeing this church become particularized and doing so well, you can't get it. You have to get excited to see what God is doing in this church. And we are. But then to go back and say, okay, God, you are faithful. Now let us be faithful and do the next, you know, do the next thing. And let's replicate or let's do it again. So there is some trust and faith. And those are just practical things. And just seeing them come to fruition, it's a beautiful thing.
I love that.
Christ is just flourishing. And we look forward to seeing what God is doing in the next one.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. That's a living example of what Mike Moses talked about yesterday. You know, which is to serialize, you got to budgetize and you just make it a part of your natural rhythm. And then one of the best practices I'm leaving with was the prayer he started and ended his talk with, which is, you know, basically forgive us of our turfism and just help us want to see lost people come to be saved. And I'm like, yeah, I should probably do that with my session, because sometimes I feel like I'm having to convince them, and when really I just need to be praying and inviting them into prayer to just not be afraid and let's keep doing this. Yeah. It was a Bob Roberts prayer, the prayer that Mike Moses prays with his session.
Yeah, he did.
Yes, I think it was in a Bob Roberts book. He gave attribution on the slides. It's in a Bob Roberts book on page 19. I remember that. I don't know which book, but it's on page 19 of that book.
And the presentations that are done in the plenary sessions, well, you can access them online. And you can, in fact, I was looking at Mike's last night. It's already up there. You can go to that and take a, I don't know how to do it. My grandchildren can take a screenshot.
Yeah, great.
I have a question based off what you just shared, because I really believe what I'm here interested in church planting. And I really believe in what Mike shared yesterday about not parachuting into a far off place to plant a church. And I know our church would struggle with, well, people are just going to go there and not stay here. And so I would be open to hearing whatever practices people have here to help shepherd your church in the direction of, no, we're birthing something new and exciting. Let's join into that, rather than like, we're going to give up our best people. We don't want to do that.
Okay, good question. So the question is, what are best practices surrounding essentially a parent church hatching off a church that may be within driving distance? Is that effectively the question? You got an answer, Hunter? Let's go for it.
Try. Hunter Bailey, EPC Church Planning. I planted a church in downtown Fayetteville, Arkansas, next to a church that had been long established. It was a struggling 100-person church. And they were terrified that I was going to close their doors. First off, I promised them that that wouldn't happen because I outlined who we said we were going to be. That'd be my practical point, is that when you're planting and you're building a church, lay deep footings, right? So you have to know who you're going to be before you try to get there. And so I was able to articulate to that church, hey, here's what we're focused on. Here's where we're headed, and here's how we'll complement what you're doing, and here's how we'll be totally different than what you're doing. And so I think if we, part of the anxiety that some parent church is feeling like that, is that when we generalize church planting as though it's like, oh, it's personality driven. Hey, you're a better preacher than I am, or you've got a better musician than I do, or your building's pretty, or whatever it is. And it's actually the DNA and culture of a church that's going to drive people there. And so I think the more that we can do as church planters, when we coach church planters to craft their mission and vision, it will help them to be able to articulate to these supporting churches of why they're a good investment. Mm-hmm. I'll end with this. My goal, if I didn't move into a role like this, was to plant 5 churches in the next 10 years in Fayetteville, Arkansas. It's a growing community. And I would tell my session, we could plant 5 churches around this square. So I'm on the downtown square of Fayetteville. Go Hogs. And so I'm on the downtown square. I would plant 5 churches, legitimately, literally neighbor churches, because I know that they're all going to have different DNA than I am. And so I think the ways that we, as if we're caring for existing churches, we need to make sure that we know who we are. And then our church planters need to be able to communicate who they are, that I think really massages that anxiety.
Yeah, and let me accentuate that too. So as you crystallize your vision, that could be in a lot of different directions. It could be intended audience. So you might say mother church or parent church just is not reaching the D church, those who have been burned by the church, and it's just not happening. And you go, well, that's going to be our vision. And we might be 10, 15 minute drive away, but we have a specific and different target audience. For me and my mother church, it was topographically related. So we're only 25 minutes away, but East Tennessee is very hilly with a lot of water. And psychologically, we're on the other side of the Tennessee River. It just is a totally different community. And so it was an easy sell to go. There was 140 adult members of the mother church in my community. And I talked with all of them and said, this is going to be really hard. I did like a Gideon's Army thing. This is going to be really, really hard. I'll have to do evangelism, and everybody's going to have a job in the church. And only about 35 of them came with me out of that 140. So it worked. So, and then all those people were gatherers. A lot of them had Young Life backgrounds. No coincidences there. I think somebody else was going to answer your question too. Tommy?
Well, I don't know if it's going to answer your question. I feel like I need to poke the bear a little bit here.
Oh no, am I the bear?
No, I think what I've heard here is very oriented. What I've heard this whole assembly, what I've heard for a lot of people, is very southern and eastern oriented.
That was one of my other
questions. So I'm planting my second church, right, in my adult life. And if you're in the Northwest or in the West, you almost by necessity are doing a scratch plant. And so when it's constantly said, the best way to do it is to do mother church, and that's really like you need to avoid this. Well, that works if you've got, you know, a lot of mother churches. The closest, my mother church is almost 300 miles away. And so there's a way to plant churches like that versus there's a way to plant, you know, like what they did. They're both bad. And I think we don't often talk about, wow, there's, you know, this whole bunch of the country, 40, 50, 60% that we're going to need to actually plant, scratch plants. We're going to have any presence there. And there's a different approach to it. So, you know, I don't know if that's poking the bear, but it's definitely not what we tend to think about. And so,
can I piggyback with that?
Yeah,
there you go.
It's an unintended thing, but I was a scratch planter in upstate New York, right? I've done it 3 times. And I think the language we're using is very dismissive of actually the majority of our planters.
Mm.
Say that last part, Ron.
It's very dismissive of the majority of our planters.
In particular, what language?
What Tommy's talking about. Like, we just keep saying Mother Church, and this is how we plant, but the majority of our planters aren't in that environment.
Sure.
And there's no voice to that side of the table. Mm-hmm. And so we're all on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And theologically, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, the remotest parts of the earth, well, then we've got a lot of Jerusalems going on, right? And so let's just write off the West, for example, right? Or let's write off big chunks of the Northeast.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very passionate about this, because I spend time with a lot of these planters, and I really think it's an unintentional slight and an insult in the language to pray.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's well said. That's one of the reasons I wanted to talk best practices, because to presume that anyone, I'm certainly not a guru. I know my context, and I had a really healthy mother church, so I had about it as easy as it can get in church planting. So that's why I didn't want to stand up here as the talking head. I wanted to share ideas, because Tommy sees things in Spokane that I'll never see, and you need to hear from Tommy just as much as me. Abby?
For their own congregation. You know, a lot of these churches may never be able to plan, but they're super excited about the work of church planners too. So maybe even if you're a mother church, you can have that share, even if it's not your church planner, but other church planners. So it doesn't feel like, oh, we're taking from you. It's like, see, this vision is exciting. You know, yeah. Board, whether it's practically or not, it's, it can't help but be excited about it.
Yeah, and I, my particular presbytery, Southeast Presbytery, is 38 churches, but only one, my mother church, could afford to actually be a parent church. And so to actually sustain church planting in our own presbytery, we've had to create multiple partners. And even then, I think Matt would tell you that even that has been a long slog to just get other partners engaged. So even in the Southeast, it can be a challenge, but you're right. I think when Mike said he wants, his goal was to have 5% of our churches to be parent churches. I think that's realistic, because most of our planners are just going to need to get a cohorts of patrons and partners, and they might be all over. I mean, I think a church in San Diego supports you in Birmingham.
San Diego, Colorado, Florida.
Yeah. 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 Back here again, and then to Tommy.
Yeah, if I could add one thing. I think when you think of church planning, I think you need not think of it as a competition. And I've seen this in New York happen, where one, you know, you plan out of one group, and then people get, you know, a bunch of people go to the other location, and you have bitterness because it's like, you know, you sent all these people out. And I think that's stifling some of it, because people feel like if I send out my best people, then what do we do? And I think the answer is it's not. And what you're saying back there is not supposed to be in square, right? Like, it's supposed to be, like, we're not competing with each other. Like, we need more churches. And at least in New York City, like, in my zip code alone, there's 78,000 people. So, if you're mad that I opened a church across the street from you, then you need to go get busy and start evangelizing, right? In our street, across the street, we have a Chinese Missionary Alliance church, there's a Hispanic church, and there's a mosque. When we had our first service there, and we're really, really small, we're a small location, about 25 people. Both pastors from the church across the street came over to say, we are so glad that you're here. That mentality is what I think I don't see with a lot of big churches. Like, we need to be encouraging people and saying, you know what, we need to send out our best people. Because the smaller churches need those best people. Like, we need that, you know? So there's no competition. And we should be rejoicing if a church opens up across the street from us, because that means that God's doing the work. You know, he's sending his people out, and we need more churches. And, you know, it's not the building. God, we are the church, you know? So the more of us that are established for that, right? So,
yeah. Always another good best practice for church planters, which is network with other pastors in your area and pray with them. Yes. Tommy.
I was going to say, especially if you're a stretch plant, to proactively work at partnering with other denominations. So, like, just because I don't have a mother church that's, like, you know, sending me people, or I still need help, right? I need tech help, right? I need all this kind of help. And so I have a son-in-law and daughter go to, they go to a big Assemblies of God church. One of the biggest strengths we have in EPC is our essentials, right? To lean into them. So I can meet with this AG guy, and basically, it's not this wooden, but it's like, hey, you agree with all these things, right? Yep. Guess what? I do too. And, you know, and then say, now, what do you think about giving me a tech guy?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what do you think about, you know?
Yeah, 100%.
And they want to plant churches. I met with a guy last week. Their guy who owns a video company who did all that, they're the kind of, well, it's like this kind of church, right, with the guys walking around, and he wants to plant a church, and I was basically like, you know what, I can help you plant a church, but I need you to help me build a website. He's like, oh, dude, that'd be awesome, man. Like, you know, so just partnering with people. And the role that I see myself in Spokane is very divided. The main drag down in Spokane is called division. It's an amazing phenomenon. And one of the great things about being in the EPC is we're sort of Switzerland, right? That we've got, you know, the complementarians are real hardcore, and they're like, you know, you guys are doing minimum. I'm like, yeah, you know, some guys don't. And they're like, okay, we'll let you in. You know, the egalitarians are like, yeah, okay, we'll let you in. And just really seeing, being able to see myself not only as planting a church, but being in some sense of a unifier of other churches, so that we can all do better together. So
yeah, I saw a few hands back here. Yes.
Hey, I'm Jerry Bando, Mechanicsville, Virginia. I'm really over there. Our son is planting a church in Dearborn, Michigan. Now, it's a PCA church, but I asked him just a little bit ago what's working for him in this community. It's 45% Muslim, and there are no other PCA churches in the community. They have a sponsor church out of Detroit, Redeemer in Detroit. However, it's a scratch start in the community. His expertise is in campus ministry. That's where they spent the last 14, 15 years. And so, to get fire started in his process, he's partnered with existing Christian ministries on the two campuses in town, and is there to help him. He's teaching Bible school, and the draw has been pretty heavy so far for these kids, these college students, to show up. Some of them are Muslim. They're seekers. They're looking around for other answers in life. And the second thing he did is there are not that many churches in his immediate area because of the Muslim influence. So he's going non-traditional and trying to partner with some of the imams to see what their needs are in the community. And one of the imams, weirdly, has said, I can't tell you how happy I am that you're here. Let me know what I can do to support you and make you successful. And Jerry goes, why would you do that? He goes, look, our community is full of young men who don't come to church. He says, I'd rather see them go to you and be involved in your church community than not be involved in, you know, at all in your church community, whether it's a Muslim or a Christian community. So look outside the box for some stuff that seems like it wouldn't work. Yeah, it's only been that in a year, so that was good.
Wow, thank you for sharing that. That is unique for sure. I saw one other hand, so we've got time for probably just one more comment. Yeah.
Maybe more of a question than anything. I'm just wondering, like, as I was listening, I've heard on several times come up from different people this idea of, like, sending out our best. And I just wonder, like, what does that really mean and what's underneath that in our, you know, church settings? And, yeah, I'm just wondering what some of your thoughts are about that, what feelings is bringing up to you all, and what feelings you maybe you feel for your congregants, like what we assume, you know, the congregants feel when we think about that phrase. And then really the question as a group of people thinking about things that's coming from me is just like, so what would it take to change that kind of culturally mindset shift, you know, I don't know.
In order to send out our best, whatever that means?
What if it was never a question of sending out our best because everybody felt capable of doing what the best we're going to go do?
Oh, I see.
What really does it take to get there? You know, like what would it take to solve that problem as a community of people that really care about this? I'm just curious.
That's a good question. We probably don't have time to unpack it. I dare three people in the room to come talk with our brother, and you answer that question, sending out our best and see what you think. So you've now been challenged. Hey, this has been great. We could have probably done this for 2 hours, honestly, and just swapped ideas. If you are a church planner, then we expect to see you in Colorado Springs in October for the church planner retreat, where this kind of stuff happens the whole week, and it's a lot of fun.